Radio Prague News.
Czech transport unions have called a nationwide strike on Monday to protest the government's planned reforms. Soldiers back from Afghanistan have received honors from the defense minister. Members of the Communist Party have slammed a bill recognizing resistance fighters who challenged the former totalitarian regime. Czech transport unions have called a day-long nationwide strike on Monday, expected to paralyze public transport in Prague, Brno and other cities and towns, as well as the country's railways. No trains, buses or trams in the capital are expected to run. Blockades have also been planned on the D1 motorway and other major routes. The announcement on Friday follows a last-minute but inconclusive meeting between the unions and the finance minister Miroslav Kalousek a day earlier. The strike is aimed against the government's reforms, including changes to health care and an overhaul of the country's pension system. It is not clear how many union members will take part. The strike is set to begin in the early hours of Monday. In a statement released by the Office of the President, Václav Klaus criticized the move by the unions, calling it, quote, political blackmail. Prime Minister Petr Nečas, meanwhile, responded to the unions on Friday by saying the government will not budge in the face of protests, which he said took the citizens hostage. He did say the government was prepared to discuss some parameters of the reforms. Czech soldiers back from Afghanistan received honors from Defense Minister Alexander Vondra on Friday. The same day, a funeral was held for their fallen colleague, Robert Virobal, killed recently in the province of Vardak by a roadside bomb. Soldiers on the square in Lipnik nad Bečvo, who served in a helicopter unit in the conflict-stricken country, held a minute of silence in their colleague's memory. The defense minister described the difficulties of serving in Afghanistan, saying the Czech Republic had been lucky to avoid similar losses in recent years. General Vlastimil Picek, the chief of the general staff of the armed forces, made clear that while Czech troops were very well equipped, it wasn't easy to predict moves by enemy fighters. Members of the Communist Party have slammed proposed legislation recognizing resistance fighters who fought against the totalitarian regime that ruled Czechoslovakia for more than 40 years. The bill is in a second reading in the lower house of parliament. Communist MP Marta Semelova charged the bill was an attempt to distract attention from what she called more pressing matters, while deputy party leader Stanislav Grospič said the government was aiming at glorifying its heroes while taxpayers fronted the bill. The head of the Czech Agriculture and Food Inspection Authority, Jakub Šebesta, has strongly criticized Germany for how it handled information in the E. coli outbreak that killed 30 people and left some 2,000 ill. In an interview for the Czech news agency, Mr. Šebesta stressed that the German authorities made mistakes by stating that cucumbers imported from Spain were responsible, a claim which did not hold up in laboratory testing. According to the Czech inspection head, the crisis which ensued, in which consumers have shied away from buying fresh produce, will heavily impact sales this year across the EU. He also stressed that 100 samples tested in the Czech Republic had all proven negative. On Friday, news sites reported that new evidence most likely tied the deadly E. coli outbreak to bean sprouts produced in Germany. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's the news.
Hello, you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Sarah Baruska. Coming up in today's program, Czech transport unions have announced a strike for Monday that will most likely bring the country to a standstill. We have all the latest business news, and in our arts program, we take a look at a contemporary science fiction novel by the Prague-based author Brian Callahan. All that and more coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech Republic is set to come to a standstill on Monday when the country will see one of the biggest labor protests in its history. To show their discontent with the government's reform plans, Czech transportation workers will go on a day-long nationwide strike that will stop trains across the country along with public transport in most major cities. The trade unions are also planning to stage blockades on major thoroughfares in the capital. Jan Richter has the details.
Dámy a pánové, vážené kolegyně, kolegové, děkujeme vám za zájem.
Czech trade unions live up to their threats on Friday when they announced that on Monday public transport around the country will come to a halt in protest against the government's overhaul of the fiscal, pension and healthcare systems. Beginning at 3 a.m., around 7,000 trains, as well as inner-city transportation in Prague, Brno, Plzeň, Olomouc and a number of other cities will stop, affecting hundreds of thousands of people. In Prague, the metro, as well as buses and trams, will not be running on Monday. Members of the miners' union, which has joined the strike, have announced they are going to block crucial thoroughfares in the capital. The union leaders did not say when the protest would end on Monday. However, it is expected to be lifted by 4 p.m. Trade union leaders apologized to the public for the inconvenience and asked for their understanding and support of the strike, which should improve conditions for most people. The head of the engine drivers' union, Jindřich Hlas, explained why.
The government refuses to explain why the reforms are solely based on cost-cutting measures and restrictions. The government ignored the trade union's proposals and has rejected to base the reforms on a wider consensus. The government does not fight corruption and does not prevent an incredible waste of public money. Instead, it pushes for a pension reform that will only benefit private pension funds and plans to devaluate the pay-as-you-go pension system.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas on Friday rejected these arguments, stating that the trade unions were taking their fellow citizens hostage. He also denied claims that his government would not talk to the trade unions.
We are ready to negotiate about changing certain features and aspects of the reforms, and we've been doing that all the time. The trade unions did not come up with any rational arguments. They totally rejected them. It seems that according to the trade unions, the best reforms would be no reforms.
According to some reports, transportation workers in several regions of the country might in fact only support the strike symbolically. Public transport in the Vysočina, Karlovy Vary and other regions may be working as usual. But the men and women on the streets of Prague, which is likely to be most affected, were surprised by the scope of the protest.
I don't agree with the strike because I don't think the transportation workers are some special group of people to take others hostage. I hope it won't affect me because I don't need public transport to get to work, if, of course, they don't block the roads as well.
I need to get to the hospital in the morning and it'll be difficult to get there. I will have to get up really early. I think they're blackmailing people who need to get to work. I definitely think they should protest in a different way.
I'm not sure if it will affect me, but I think it's absolutely okay. I even think it was about time the trade unions stopped talking and began to act. Even if I traveled on Monday, I would still think it's absolutely okay.
Monday's strike is not the first protest against the government's reforms. In September, some 40,000 public workers staged a rally in Prague following a 10% cut in their salaries, while around the same number of people showed up for a march through the capital last month.
Thank you for this report, Jan. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Now it is time for the latest from the world of business.
The Czech economy grew in the first quarter of the year by 2.8%, or 0.3% more than preliminary estimates expected, According to the Czech Statistical Office, which released the data, that means an increase of 0.9% compared to the last quarter of last year. The office says the increase was driven primarily by foreign trade and that the Czech economy was benefiting from healthy conditions in its main export market, Germany. Meanwhile, analysts for the Czech press agency say the news slightly improves the expected outlook for the growth of GDP for the whole year. Most anticipate around 2% growth for the year, which is still slower than the 2.2% in 2010. Foreign trade is expected to remain the driving force of economic growth. However, the government's austerity measures will work against any increase.
Speaking of foreign trade, the Czech Top 100 Association reports a good year for the 50 largest Czech exporters last year. 2010 saw a 30% increase in their exports compared to the previous crisis year, up to 832 billion crowns. The biggest exporter was again Škoda Auto, which increased its exports to 198 billion, followed by electronics manufacturer Foxconn ZZ at 110 billion. RWE Transgas enjoyed a rise in exports of more than 50% year-on-year to 68.5 billion crowns. Czech Top 100 says the new list shows the greatest change year-on-year in the last 5 years, indicating promising recovery of Czech trade. In 2009, the 50 largest Czech exporters reported a 125 billion decrease.
The good news does not end there for Škoda Auto, which recorded its highest May sales in history. The number of automobiles sold reached 78,100, or 19.5% more than the previous May, and marked a new sales record for the company in Russia and Switzerland. Only 4,800 of those, however, were sold in the Czech Republic, where the most popular models were by far the Octavia and Fabia. The manufacturer also reported the sale of more than 373,000 vehicles in the first 5 months of this year, which is year-on-year growth of 21.5%. The company says it is satisfied with the course of the year so far and that it fully corresponds with their growth strategy.
Czech inflation sped up to 2% in May compared to the 1.6% registered in the previous month. According to government figures released this week, a primary factor by rising consumer prices pushed inflation forward, with a year-on-year increase in the total consumer price index minus rents of more than 102%. The actual inflation growth was 0.3% higher than a previous estimate by the Czech National Bank. Nonetheless, analysts suggest that the rise will not mean the bank will have to increase interest rates anytime soon, as the inflation is driven by factors over which such a step would not have influence. Moreover, economists suggest that inflation will be reduced over the course of the year by high unemployment and low growth of wages.
Lastly, the Hungarian low-cost airline Wizz Air is set to start a connection between Brno and the Dutch city of Eindhoven on December 16th, further increasing the passenger load at the Brno-Turani Airport. Already in the first quarter of 2011, the airport saw an increase in passengers of 63% more than in the same period last year, nearing 100,000 in only 3 months. The airport is now offering more foreign destinations than ever before, with connections to and from London, Milan, and Moscow, and new flights to St. Petersburg, Rome, and Alicante. Wizz Air intends the new connection primarily for servicing Brussels and parts of Germany.
This week's business news with Christian Salvi. Thank you, Christian. In today's arts, Jan Wellinger's guest is Brian Callahan, a Prague-based author of a new action-adventure thriller called The Seeds of Cain. Inspired by biblical themes and medieval legend, the novel throws together an unlikely group of adventurers to find an ancient evil. The story takes them from a corner of Prague to an archaeological dig in the Middle East and beyond. Jan Wellinger began by asking the author about the threat the characters face in the book.
Well, the threat is basically called the Seeds of Cain. It's an ancient weapon that disappeared during the Crusades. It's believed to have been that when Cain made his offering to God, which God rejected, those seeds were planted, thereby giving Cain his mark. These seeds were passed down. They were used as the destroyers of civilization. If you study theology as I have, theology and literature, You notice that in the Bible, even in the Quran, civilization is considered to be evil. Joshua's trumpet destroys civilization. Goliath destroys civilization, of course. And the Old Testament is completely full of the destruction of civilization. So one last seed is left. That seed is rediscovered. It is given to five boys, little slivers. And those five teenage boys mutate into these monsters called the Seeds of Cain. It's a biblical idea, of course, but the idea is turned into a thriller.
And if I understand correctly, you've also connected the biblical story of the seeds to the legend of the golem.
Yes, of course. It's really weird how it came to be. I had bought for my son a book on the golem, and they were talking about how the golem comes from untouched earth. And I'd begun writing my novel already, and I was like, well, you know, I want to open it in Prague. I want Prague involved. I live in Prague. So I was thinking, hey, this would be a great way to tie it in. Of course, where did the seeds come from? The seeds are planted in the earth. And of course, where does the golem come from? Also from earth. So I decided to connect the two, and I think it worked out well.
Five characters, as you said, consume the seed and go through this metamorphosis. They are basically changed into these monsters, these giants. You go to great lengths to describe the creature's viewpoint many times throughout the novel, how they are reduced to basic instincts, to basic needs. How long did it take you to hammer out exactly what kind of creatures these would be?
Ha, that's a really, really excellent question. I don't exactly remember how it came about, like the development of the creatures into non-thinking entities relying on instinct. I know a lot of it comes from philosophy, that humanity has five basic needs. So I knew it derived from that, my line of thinking, that these creatures just have five basic needs. None of them pertain to what we call civilization. You know, no computers, no internet, no radio, nothing like that. I wanted it reduced to just your basic needs, shelter, clothing, food, just a completely philosophical creature. Getting into their head, I just wanted to slow the action down, give myself a breather, and I wanted to explain the creatures. And I couldn't exactly do it in the sense that the creatures meet another human and that human describes how they're thinking, what they're feeling, how they're moving.
So, they usually don't have time when they encounter them.
Yeah, you're usually trying to run away from these things or get them out of your head, as it were. So my line of thinking was, well, let's see what they're doing. Let's follow their motions. Let's, you know, see if they're trying to become human again, if there is something internal inside of them that will return them to being us.
Are they, in the book, responsible for their actions?
No, not at all. It's basically they're just entities trying to survive. Their only understanding is basically the same understanding most animals have, is that mankind, humanity, civilization is the enemy.
It also strikes me that although the monsters are the cause of fear in the book,
yep,
that it's the actions of the humans that are often more, at times, despicable or more questionable, certainly, than these creatures.
Yeah, I think that's always been the way since we climbed out of the primordial ooze, as it were, primordial ooze. So humanity has to destroy them, but the people they're fighting, a gangster, a savage gangster, a weapons dealer, basically these people are bad. A woman working on a dig in Lebanon, where there are factions, religious factions, who've been at war for hundreds of years, trying to control the history that comes out of the dig. So it's basically like, yeah, the humans aren't good in the book. John McFadden is. He's done redemption for his sins. The Czech psychiatrist has committed no crime, but at the same time, her husband, she's just discovered her husband's been cheating on her, that the child that he and her had promised the mother isn't going to be. So the humans in my book, the people, haven't lived angelic lives. And yes, they are suddenly thrust together to battle this thing that is looked at as evil, but it's just surviving. Unlike us, who are manipulating our way through life, committing sins or doing bad deeds, as it were.
I should describe one aspect of the monsters, which is that part of their instinct is this kind of sense of where others of their kind are in relation to them. Another aspect is also this kind of, I don't know, the same way an animal might release something into the air to warn others. They are able to sort of cause chaos, create these waves which affect people in usually quite negative ways. They begin killing or acting in ways they normally wouldn't. Do you think that by describing these elements that you were able to make the creatures more, say, believable?
I do, because I looked at it as, again, they were the destroyers of civilization. And mankind, one of the things that humanity has done throughout history is simply turn on each other. When I made it more believable, what was believable about it was man's ability via these creatures to simply have all these things inside of themselves that they wanted to release, that they've been building up, these hatreds, these animosities. And then all of a sudden this creature comes in with this kind of mind control that it just sets off. And these people who've been carrying these hatreds unleash them. Could be against their wives, could be against, you know, their children. In one scene, it was a gangster against, you know, the people who were protecting him, who were hiding him. So it's just people explode when these creatures are around. And if you look at the history, I'd been reading about sages at the time, military sages, and one of the things that brought down cities, besides lack of food, lack of water, weather changes, and also the people inside began to kill each other. So what the creatures do is they speed up the process.
There are many moments in the novel where, as a reader, you have a sense of dread about what's going to happen.
Thank you. That's what I was aiming for.
There are a few really key pitched battles, one that you've already alluded to, which is the one in Lebanon where Christian and Muslim refight, in fact, an ancient battle. And that really gets unhinged. There's also the monster's appearance in a district in Prague, right. Prague 7, and there's the finale in Long Island. As an author, how do you approach using violence?
That's the thing. You don't want to go too overboard. Like, yes, the limb is destructive, and obviously there's going to be more of that going on, and the reader knows. But if you keep showing over and over again the monster, the creature attacking, and all this violence, the reader's going to lose their sense of belief. You know, like Jaws, Steven Spielberg waited for the entire hour and a half before he finally showed you what this shark looks like. And meanwhile, you've just been sweating, you know, through three layers of clothing in an air-conditioned cinema. So I think the trick, in order to keep the reader interested in the horrors going on, is not to pound it over his head.
In the book, you set up different characters and separate storylines that gradually come together. And that, of course, allows you to jump between their stories and allows you to leave the reader hanging at the end of chapters. I think it's part of the genre that you want to kind of set up that story where just when something happens, you cut away begin another thread, and it sort of comes together only much later in the book. How much satisfaction do you get from that?
Well, I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. I really got excited when people were calling me up or emailing me, complaining about deaths. Like, they really loved characters, or, you know, they wanted this character to do this, but they loved the way it turned out anyway. That's very difficult to hold readers' attention. I'll be honest, the book was honestly a 2-3 year experience for me. So I can't say, like, again, this happened overnight, like, boom, there it was, and great ending there.
That's the way it is, because as a reader, all that is glossed over, of course. You never know.
Yeah.
You know. I was thinking, like, just, you know, the technique of jumping. I love when you can go from one story and just leave the character hanging.
Going from Lebanon to back to Prague and then Prague. I think that's partially, again, subconscious. Like, you've carried this as far as you can. Let's switch. Let's move to the, let's move locales.
Writing a novel has to require a lot of dedication. You've said it wasn't easy. What was your process of actually writing the book? When do you find time to write? And how did you get published?
I wake up every morning at 5 a.m. I write every day at 5 o'clock in the morning. Take it from there. Usually in the afternoons, I'll try and read what I wrote. The first draft of the book was 1,400 pages, which was way, way, way too long. I threw everything, including the kitchen sink, in there, I think 3 times too many But the thing that makes you an author is the ability to say, without crying too much, the ability to say, yeah, I worked really hard on this, but it doesn't work. And then getting drunk, you know, also helps. But, I went through CreateSpace, which is an Amazon.com company. They've been really, really, really helpful. And, you know, publicizing it, pushing it. Expat Prague has been really good about it. A lot of my friends here or people I knew in the States. And they're spreading word of mouth. People have enjoyed the book, so I'm really relying right now on word of mouth sales.
And the book, of course, is available on Amazon.
Yes, through CreateSpace, yep.
Now, The Seeds of Cain mentions or alludes to past adventures of your protagonist, John McFadden, before, but also coming up. It sort of has an ending where you wonder what's coming next for him. Is he alive and well and likely to make an appearance in an upcoming book?
Everybody asks that. My God, that's hard. I am a fan of Stephen King, and he doesn't use the same character twice. But I'm a fan of other horror writers who've tried to do a connect-the-story, same character, and you get that die-hard feeling. Why does this keep happening to this guy? I love John McFadden. I've used him since I was 19. Faden, you know, I took it from Greek mythology, the character of Faden. So we'll see, yeah.
There's something inherently cool about a character who has special buttons on his jacket that he's able to cut through materials with and that kind of thing. He's an adventurer, but he's also intelligent. He has a shady past, but he also has a family now and is a family man, so it combines all of these different elements. So maybe that's part of the popularity as well.
I don't know. Yes, he is cool. He's based on a guy I grew up with, parts of him. Parts of him are based on myself. Not the cool parts. Believe me. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I do want to bring him back. I do love him.
Okay, yeah. Brian Callahan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Jan. Cheers.
Jan Wellinger was speaking there to author Brian Callahan in this edition of The Arts, which first aired in March. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with Sound Check, our popular Czech language learning program brought to you this time by Christian Falvey.
Hello and welcome to Sound Check. Do you ever get the feeling that the world has gone mad, that everything is upside down? The songwriters Voskovets and Verich had the same feeling when they wrote the following ditty more than 70 years ago, but in Czech they called it Svět na ruby, or the world inside out.
Ať mi řeknou hvězdáři, zdali jen sní, nebo zdali bdí, když na ruby svět.
Leave it to the astronomers to tell me whether I'm dreaming or awake when I see the world upside down, or inside out, in Czech. So if you think the world has gone topsy-turvy, you can take some comfort in the fact that it was topsy-turvy 70 years ago as well. Certainly even more so, in fact. The usually comic Verich is singing about chewing slogans instead of bread, in a bitter testament to the age he was singing in.
Zdali jen sní, nebo zdali bdí, když na ruby svět vidí, je to divný svět.
Naturally, it's not usually the world that's referred to as na ruby, luckily, but your shirt. You can also say the world's gone mad by saying svět je vzhůru nohama, it's upside down, or literally feet upwards. Or you can see it, or any other mad situation, as being postaveni na hlavu, standing on its head. Those are some things to think about when you look around at the things that boggle the mind, or nechá rozum stát, things that leave your reason standing.
Christian Falvey with Soundcheck wrapped up Radio Prague's English show for today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Sarah Borufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.